You're listening to a podcast hosted by Med Learning Group.
Welcome to our first of two podcasts on pulmonary hypertension in interstitial lung disease hosted by Med Learning Group. This two-part series is titled, Are You Up to Date in Best Practices for PH-ILD Screening, Diagnosis, and Treatment? The program is geared towards members of the multidisciplinary care team who manage PH-ILD, including primary care providers and internists, pulmonologists, cardiologists, rheumatologists, advanced practice providers, and others involved in managing PH-ILD. In this episode, we'll be talking about screening and diagnosis of PH-ILD. My name is Chris, and I'll be the host of today's podcast. Joining me today is Dr. Nirav Shah. Dr. Shah is a professor of medicine, assistant dean of medical education, and clinical chief of the Division of Pulmonary, Critical Care, and Sleep Medicine at the University of Maryland School of Medicine. Dr. Shah has been heavily involved in managing patients with PH-ILD for many years and has most recently turned much of his attention to educating others on this and other topics in pulmonology. Dr. Shah, welcome to our discussion.
Thank you, Chris. Happy to be here today.
So I know I just gave you a brief introduction, but introduce yourself. How long have you been a caregiver in pulmonology and how did you arrive in this particular specialty?
Thanks, Chris. I joined the faculty at the University of Maryland School of Medicine in 2009 after completing my fellowship in critical care medicine at NIH and pulmonary disease fellowship at the University of Maryland. It was probably in my intern year of residency that I identified my passion for critical care medicine, but it was a few years after that that I really turned my attention towards pulmonary diseases and have loved every minute of it. I started taking care of patients with interstitial lung disease in around 2015 to 2016. And since that time, it's really been a pleasure to get to know this patient population. The field has been changing an awful lot, and it's been really a joy to be involved in the care of patients that have difficulty breathing, trying to identify why that is and help them feel better along the way.
Well, thanks for joining, and we're definitely happy to have you on board with us today. Now, in this podcast, we're talking about pulmonary hypertension in interstitial lung disease. Now, these two conditions can exist separately, of course, but what links them together in PH-ILD specifically? What's the connection?
The physiology and the pathophysiology of these two diseases has some overlap. And so while you're absolutely right that these diseases can exist and often exist in isolation of each other, there is a significant portion of the population where you need to think, is pulmonary hypertension complicating my patient with interstitial lung disease? So when you think about the physiology of ILD and PH, interstitial lung disease has inflammation, oxidative stress, endothelial dysfunction, as well as alveolar hypoxia that then lead to vascular remodeling and vasoconstriction. These things will elevate your pulmonary vascular resistance and ultimately your pulmonary arterial pressures, which are the hallmarks of pulmonary hypertension. So in patients that we are treating for ILD, as those patients progress and have more fibrosis in their lungs, there's a good possibility that their clinical situation will be complicated by pulmonary hypertension because of the overlapping physiology and pathophysiology of these diseases.
So the World Health Organization has a five-part classification of pulmonary hypertension that classifies it based on etiology or where it arises from, because there's so many different potential sources or causes. Where does ILD fit within this classification of pulmonary hypertension?
So there are five classes of pulmonary hypertension, or five groups of pulmonary hypertension, according to the World Health Organization. Group one, pulmonary arterial hypertension. Group two, PH is associated with left heart disease. Group three, which is pulmonary hypertension associated with lung diseases and or hypoxia. And this is where ILD will fit in, and I'll come back to that in a second. Group four, which is PH associated with pulmonary artery obstruction. And then group five, which is PH with unclear or multifactorial mechanisms. So when we think about ILD, that's going to fall into that group three. And this is a very common kind of bucket of patients with pulmonary hypertension. This could be patients with obstructive lung disease or emphysema, patients with restrictive lung disease, which is the category that ILD usually falls into because there's parenchymal abnormalities and that causes a restriction on pulmonary function tests, and then other things like hypoxia without lung disease or developmental lung disorders. But this is really kind of one of the most common buckets or groups of pulmonary hypertension, and ILD is part of that.
Okay, so those are the kind of the etiologies of pulmonary hypertension, the classification. Let's move on to signs and symptoms, and we'll talk about diagnostic criteria shortly. But what do patients typically present with that raise suspicion of PH-ILD specifically?
So the first thing I'll say is that patients with ILD and PH are going to have shortness of breath. They're going to have shortness of breath at baseline. They're going to have shortness of breath with exertion and might even have hypoxemia that's associated with their condition, either at rest or with exertion as well. But the things that really make us think about PH in our ILD patients are a history of pulmonary embolism, patients that feel dizzy or have palpitations, on exam if they have a parasternal heave or an altered P2 or S2 heart sound. In later stages, you might see JVD or peripheral edema, hepatomegaly, syncope, and even ascites in late stages. The reality is that our suspicion for patients with interstitial lung disease to think about pulmonary hypertension should be a low bar. That if these patients have symptoms that are out of proportion to what we think we're seeing on pulmonary function testing, if they have physical exam findings that I mentioned previously, we really should be investigating whether these patients have PH complicating their interstitial lung disease.
All right, so it's kind of a constellation of symptoms and setting a low bar, like you mentioned. Now, when you're trying to establish a diagnosis, what clinical or diagnostic findings are you looking for that would be indicative of PH-ILD?
Great, Chris. So for clinical findings, I'll lean back on the peripheral edema or ankle swelling, JVD, RV dysfunction, signs or symptoms of that. But there are diagnostic findings that we're going to think about. So for pulmonary function tests, for example, I just saw a patient earlier today where their DLCO was much lower than I expected based on what their spirometry and their lung volumes were. So when you see a DLCO that's disproportionately reduced compared to a normal or modestly reduced lung volume, you should think about pulmonary hypertension. A 6-minute walk test that's lower than expected despite a normal PFT or a marked drop in their exertional oxygen saturation. On lab testing, it could be an elevated BNP or NT-proBNP. CT findings, this is an interesting area because we get CTs pretty regularly on our ILD patients. So looking for that increased pulmonary artery to ascending aorta ratio, looking at a main pulmonary artery diameter greater than 29 millimeters, signs of RV enlargement, or flattening of the intraventricular septum are all going to be things that make me think, hey, does this person have pulmonary hypertension? And then ultimately on echocardiogram, a tricuspid regurgitant peak velocity greater than 2.8, RV to LV basal diameter ratio of greater than 1, RV outflow Doppler acceleration time less than 105 milliseconds, a PA diameter greater than 25 millimeters, an IVC diameter greater than 21 plus decreased inspiratory collapse, or a right atrial area greater than 18 centimeters squared. So the echo is going to be kind of more data-driven to say, you know, do these things exist on the echocardiogram? And then kind of the constellation of findings will make us think, does this patient have pulmonary hypertension or not? When we're thinking about kind of screening our patients, you want to make sure that you're getting some of these tests pretty regularly. And we do this for our interstitial lung disease patients anyway. I always tell my patients I use three things to really kind of keep track of them. One is, how do they feel? Two is testing in the pulmonary function lab. That includes PFTs as well as O2 saturations and 6-minute walk tests. And then a CT scan ultimately, usually, you know, once a year, if something's changing, maybe a little more frequent than that. If things are stable, maybe a little less frequent, but looking at those findings that I mentioned, and then lab testing with the BNP and the NT-proBNP. And then if that testing makes my suspicion of pH high, then I'm going to go on to echocardiography. If I have no suspicion of pH, then you don't have to do further workup at that point.
Okay, so we've put together kind of an initial screening and diagnosis plan. Now, in some cases, right heart catheterization might be necessary during the workup. When is this particular procedure needed?
It always will follow an echocardiogram. So I would never go directly to a right heart catheterization without getting an echocardiogram first. And then when I get the echo, if the clinical suspicion of pulmonary hypertension is high and the echo probability of pulmonary hypertension is either high or intermediate, I'm going to go on to a right heart catheterization. If it's low, I'm going to consider a right heart cath, but I may not automatically just jump to that. If my clinical suspicion of pulmonary hypertension is low, but the echo still shows a high probability, I'm going to go on to right heart catheterization. If it's intermediate, I'll consider it. And if it's low, the patient doesn't need a right heart cath if echo is low and my clinical suspicion is low. So it's kind of this like algorithm of, you know, what do I think clinically and what is my data showing? What is the echocardiogram showing? And so that'll help determine whether I go on to get a right heart cath. So clinical symptoms, just to reiterate, kind of worsening symptoms of dyspnea on exertion, dizziness, syncope, palpitations, et cetera. Physical exam findings, as we've talked about, looking at our exercise capacity and gas exchange, looking at our 6-minute walk test, is the distance much lower than we would anticipate? Do they have a low heart rate recovery, et cetera? Looking at lab testing with BNP or NT-proBNP, CT imaging with RV enlargement, pulmonary artery to aorta ratio, and then echo findings. High clinical suspicion, right heart catheterization. Low clinical suspicion, put it on your list of things you may want to consider, but it may not be an absolute must.
Okay, so now we've got another minute or two here. So as we conclude this podcast, what's your 60-second elevator speech for screening and diagnosis of PH-ILD? What are our kind of wrap-up conclusions for this podcast?
So my conclusion would be always have a high level of suspicion that pulmonary hypertension could be confounding your patients with interstitial lung disease. Use your physical exam and your clinical findings to support that. Get the testing you need. So while clinical exam is helpful, it alone can't accurately determine PH-ILD. So things like pulmonary function tests, 6-minute walk test, echocardiogram, CT scan are all important testing that we would want to get. From there, move on to non-invasive screening such as echo. And then from there, if your suspicion remains high, the gold standard for identifying PH-ILD is going to be right heart catheterization.
Well, great. Well, thank you very much, Dr. Shah. Based on our discussion, there's been a good deal of, you know, recent updates and research and discussion around screening and diagnosis of PH-ILD. And thank you for all the work you do in this particular area to help patients with this condition. But that's all the time we have today. Thank you, Dr. Shah, for taking time out of your day to speak with us. And thanks to all of our listeners for joining us. Hopefully you're able to tune into our other podcast in this series, in which we'll explore different treatment options, along with thoughts on multidisciplinary care team and management needed for patients with PH-ILD. This podcast was brought to you by MedLearning Group. In support of improving patient care, MedLearning Group is jointly accredited by the Accreditation Council for Continuing Medical Education, the Accreditation Council for Pharmacy Education, and the American Nurses Credentialing Center to provide continuing education for the healthcare team. This CME activity was planned and produced in accordance with the ACCME Essentials. I would also like to give a special thank you to our educational grant supporter, United Therapeutics Corporation, who provided an educational grant for this activity. Thank you very much and have a great day.